Get a head start on 2025 with CNBC's Big January, the hottest tech event, CES, from Las Vegas. The data, the numbers, the jobs report, and meet the future of biotech and pharma at JPM Healthcare. Check out the Amex Golf Tournament from California, Inauguration Day, and the meeting of world leaders in Davos. Plus, the first Fed decision of the year. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Leonard takes another knee. Clock says 30 seconds. Both teams onto the field. The Irish have done it. They win the Sugar Bowl, and they're on their way to Miami. A date with Penn State. The winner will play for the national championship. And Marcus Freeman, in year three, has his signature win.
Notre Dame Radio Network, and look at that. All of a sudden, Notre Dame has become likable again. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. It's like a sea change here for the Irish. I think Marcus Freeman, easy guy to root for, Pearl. Not that Chip, that Brian Kelly wasn't easy to root for.
I'm having trouble getting
Freeman,
on board.
A little bit different, yeah.
The team's so boring, though. I mean, they're so boring.
Okay, but what they may lack in downfield passing and, you know, explosive plays, they make up for in fun trick plays on special teams. Huh? How about lining up like you're going to punt the ball and then doing a full 11-man substitution and instead drawing Georgia offsides? Yeah. And that was just one of the ways that Notre Dame won on the margins last night.
Yeah.
They beat the Bulldogs. They're going to the semifinal.
I'm having trouble wrapping my head around them because I don't even really know what happened last night. As with most of these college games, it's like, yeah, Notre Dame won, but were they impressive? Like, defensively, heck yeah.
Definitely.
But their offense was so limited. It's just so bizarre that you could get to the Final Four and not have 100 yards passing and not really, like, have your, you know, you didn't really have any running except for your quarterback either. Like, they just did nothing last night, and they were in control of the whole game.
Well, I think that Marcus Freeman had the game plan here because you notice they never got away from it. Even when they had opportunities, when you had a second and short, you know, in times when you would make a big play, go for an explosive, something like that, they just kept running the ball with Riley Leonard, the quarterback.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, they also had the kick return for a touchdown to start the second half. They capitalized before the first half ended when they had a strip sack fumble of Gunnar Stockton and set them up right at the 12-yard line and scored one play later. So what they, you know, they had a lot of penalties, so I can't necessarily say they played a totally clean game, but they just played a pretty straightforward game outside of that special team sort of trick play.
Wow, that's exciting, man. Straightforward. Let's go.
They won.
Straightforward.
This is the biggest bowl game that Notre Dame has won in 31 years. They don't care how they win.
Well, and again, I refuse to call this a bowl game. I just will not do it. Technically, it's a bowl game, but it's a playoff. It's just, biggest game they've won. The funny thing, too, is this is, we're seeing the fruits of the 12-team playoff, because I don't think the way it landed at the end, Notre Dame wouldn't have made the Final Four, so they wouldn't even be here in last year's format. They were fifth. Penn State would have gotten, presumably, the fourth spot. So, again, like it, I think we're getting into NCAA basketball. It feels like anything could happen on any of these games. And last night was a big anything could happen game. There were strange calls, strange bounces. There was a walk-on interfering with an official.
Yep.
There was a blown call against Notre Dame that hurt them. There was, I mean, it was all sorts of, just like the Arizona State-Texas game, it's just become like a real, like, random bounce of the ball kind of playoffs. Like, you really don't know what's going to happen week to week at all.
I get that.
Yeah.
And I know we've had more blowouts than close games so far in this playoff. But to be honest, like, I thought you looked at Georgia and they were vulnerable all year.
I mean, this, and they had
this
a backup
Georgia
quarterback.
Team. Yeah. And a backup quarterback. I know they won the SEC championship, so it's weird to say that this is not the standard we're used to with Georgia, but it wasn't. I mean, they were a team that was up and down because of shaky quarterback play, injuries along the offensive line. It was not full and utter domination like we've seen from some Georgia teams. Now, I still thought they were going to win the game, but listen, Notre Dame took it to them. And Nick Costos joined us in the last segment. I agree with him. I do think Marcus Freeman out-coached Kirby Smart also. And here's the thing about the playoff so far. Yeah, again, we've had blowouts. Maybe it hasn't been everyone's been a barn burner. But in the old system, Perloff, we never get Arizona State in Texas. We get that great game because Arizona would be playing some bowl game against some SEC team that probably half the team sits.
Yeah, I'm totally for it. I like it. Just realize what and you're going to grow it too. It's 12 for now. You're getting into, it's going to be much more like the basketball tournament where you're going to have upsets and it's good. And NIL has also created this crazy amount of parity that we haven't seen in 100 years in college football. The one thing I don't think, yes, Marcus Freeman did outcoach him, especially on special teams, but make no mistake, this Georgia team, talent-wise, does not even closely resemble the team from 3 years ago.
Definitely not.
Like, especially the receivers just outright stink. It was a backup quarterback.
Dropping passes.
The defense was actually somewhat hot and cold this year, which is unusual. They used to be just dominant. They couldn't, like, Notre Dame we saw, like, with all the Notre Dame has a ton of NFL guys who are just killing them. Georgia didn't seem to be able to get their NFL guys going. I would have pressured Riley Leonard I would have just blitzed 10 guys. Remember, there were some drives where they really got aggressive on defense, and it worked. So in that sense, I'm not sure what Smart should have done differently, but he didn't have the answers last night.
No,
I agree with you.
But there were bad penalties on their side. They couldn't pick up a fourth and two. Okay, can a Georgia team up a fourth and two?
Huge. The two fourth downs were huge. Notre Dame missed a couple fourth downs as well.
No doubt. Meanwhile, here's the thing about the college football playoff. Yes, I know the SEC, this is not the showing they were probably expecting, right? Because the only representative they have in this Final Four is a team that was actually playing in the Big 12 about a year and a half ago, and that's Texas. And Texas, though, playing Ohio State and Notre Dame playing Penn State, does it get any bluer blood than this? All that said, Boise, Arizona State, Indiana, you know, these non-traditional, if you will, powerhouses, although we've seen teams have success. It's coming down to the bluest of the blue bloods in this Final Four.
But obviously, we haven't seen Penn State in a... When's the last time we saw Penn State in a title game?
Was it the 80s?
Oh, 90...
No, 97, did they say? I forgot. Anyway,
it's blue, but and also, too, like, it's definitely not... You know, the 10 years of the Final Four, there was not a lot of Penn State, Texas, Notre Dame, and...
Clemson. But like maybe you just needed to give a little bit of a chance this is like the point I'm making while I'm bringing up these blue bud things is that for everyone wants to so quick, we got to change the format. We've got to change this. And I get it. If I'm an Oregon Ducks fan, I'm screaming from the hilltops too. We have the number one seed. Congrats. You get to play Ohio State. But what did we ultimately get here? We got four teams that all it's not a shock to see any of them playing for a national title this year. They were all ranked in the top six.
It'd be pretty surprising to me to see Penn State playing in the national, like, because of James Franklin's difficult pass. But let me say, I do think at 16 would have even been better because you look at the teams that just missed.
Yeah, Ole Miss.
Miss, South Carolina, Alabama. Maybe Alabama will go, but and Miami. I think Miami's defense is terrible. But I watched this fight. I think Miami could have competed with a lot of these teams and been very interesting. So I think you could go. It's funny the way it laid out this year. The next four teams would have been very competitive in this field because you never know. It's really interesting to me how much parity there is. And you're seeing it play out now a little bit. I know there were blowouts early.
Yeah.
The other thing, like, there's a lot of people are saying, that Oregon should have gotten a home game, like things like that. Like, they can tweak this format even more, that, like, you know, you shouldn't have the automatic bids at 3 and 4. Like, I think they kind of screwed over Oregon. They can fix that. We're going to see a lot of, I think there are going to be changes next year, format-wise.
Probably. There was a friend of the show, Master Testifion. I hope I got his last name right. Yeah. Love Master. Great writer. Does phenomenal job. Bleacher Report, The Ringer. He's written for a lot of places, and he's great. He had a good suggestion last night on social media. I want to give him credit for it, but I don't know if it will happen. It's like one of those perfect world things, which is that the quarterfinals, which is the round we just got through with, should also be on the campus of the higher seed. So how we got all that great imagery of, you know, Tennessee going to Ohio State and SMU having to go to Penn State, for the teams that got the bye, they should also be able to host a playoff game. Now, we kind of know this, that the bowl system, I know you don't count this as technically a bowl, but the Sugar Bowl did run that game last night, right? The Fiesta Bowl. Right. All these bowls want theirs. And I think they want to have them at these neutral fields. So again, I don't know how pie in the sky this idea is, but that sounds pretty cool. If you were Oregon, you should have gotten that game on your home field. That would have been awesome.
Yeah, totally.
But I think the bowl industrial complex is not going to allow it to happen.
Well, things are changing at such a rapid pace in college football. Who knows if they're going to have any power in 2, 3, 4 years. And, you know, obviously the SEC has the most power. Like, if it's one thing that Oregon didn't get it. I mean, if Alabama had lost out on a home game, maybe they could exert more pressure. Yeah, that's what I said. I think, like, major changes are coming. I think they're going to totally revamp this format next year. And then 2 years, oh, God, who knows what's going to happen? Because isn't it sort of like an interim 2-year plan here with the 12 team? I think they're definitely going 16. Let's just start there. And you might as well, because you have so much parity in college football right now that you could get some really good teams. Now, also, too, I love Boise. I love SMU.
Yeah.
I just think something like they should not have been 3-4. That didn't help them.
Okay.
It didn't help anybody.
I get it, but they made a big deal about being your conference champion.
Yeah, they did make a big deal. I think they could just, like many things that have happened over the last 5 years in college football, just forget it, move on, come back to reality. I know they made a big deal of it, but let's face it, that why not change it?
Okay, well, pull that thread. If not being a conference champion means anything anymore, then get ready for people to opt out of the conference championship game.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's someone's probably making a lot of money off that conference championship game. And I doubt that person, those parties, whoever they are going to want to easily give up that cash cow.
Yeah, but I mean, listen, bowls have lost their power gradually over the last 25 years. Like, things changed.
I know, but don't you feel like it came back a little bit this year? Because I think guys were playing like Shador Sanders and Travis Hunter because of NIL. And so if it's in your contract, hey, you've got to appear also in the bowl game, at least for a half, then I think that's what helped save the bowl games.
But I don't think those bowl games did very well this year because of the 12-team playoff. I don't think anybody cared or
I bet
noticed.
A lot of people watched that Michigan-Alabama game.
Yeah, but probably not as much as in years past. I think
that would be more than years past because Milroe played. And normally, why would the quarterback ever play, especially one who literally just declared for the draft the next day?
I think like the new, like it hasn't been, this has been a recent trend. I think the non-Final Four bowl games, you think these, Alabama Michigan was the one game that people probably watched, but generally, like there was a bowl game on last night. Like, who would have watched that?
No, but it's more people are going to watch because Jackson Dart actually was playing in the game. You don't think anyone watched that Colorado game? To watch Shador and Travis?
Maybe Colorado. But generally, I'll bet you bowl games were way down. Because, you know, the bowl games are definitely watered down by having the 12-team playoffs. I don't think the ratings were good on bowl games at all. Maybe I'm wrong, but like, no, of course not.
Having the starting quarterbacks play has to help.
It's just following the social media last. Like, nobody cared about the Ole Miss-Duke game last night. Like, that was just like, it felt like a preseason game at best. We totally disagree. Like, so you think the bowl games are up this year because of NIL? I think the bowl games are just so irrelevant in the 12-team playoff era.
For what it's worth, just on the Alamo Bowl this year was a record of 8 million viewers for that game.
Which one was that?
That was the BYU versus Colorado game we were talking about.
Yeah.
I don't know about the other games, but that was what that game was.
I watched that game because of now I'm a BYU fan.
BYU, I mean, you got to watch Shador. You got to watch Travis. These guys are must-see. We asked you guys on social media, is Notre Dame football now likable? 57% of you are saying yes, they are now likable. And can Notre Dame win the national title? 66% of you are saying yes, they can win the national title. You know, it wasn't like a pretty game last night, but in some ways, there was a bit of a beauty to it in that Notre Dame capitalized on the opportunities they were given against a really, you know, a powerhouse of a team. Yeah, it's not the Georgia team from a couple years ago when 9 guys went to the NFL off that defense, but it's still a blue blood program that won the SEC. And when Notre Dame got the opportunity of a turnover, they scored a touchdown. Kickoff return, touchdown. When they need to bleed clock, quarterback running, getting first downs. Listen, that they won the game. And this is a formula for them to win the title. Penn State, as Nick Costa said, as you have said, feels like they got a double bye on the way to the semifinals. If no one sold on James Franklin, why not Notre Dame getting to the national championship game? And then now you're in the title game, and who knows what could happen?
Yeah, I like Ohio State. I think I think they have a lot of really big-time defensive players who can sort of challenge Riley Leonard physically. So I think Notre Dame would have to vary their offense against him. And now that the coaching staff got out of their coma.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've scored 42 points and 41 points against two really good teams.
Yeah, yeah. So, it seems unrealistic. I think they're a big long shot, Notre Dame, to win that game. But you're right. I mean, anything could happen. But, God, I don't feel like we're on the brink of a title with them. If the team I saw last night, I mean, they were quite dysfunctional on offense. Unless they were just like milking the clock, there was just no play where Riley Leonard got into a pocket and saw a receiver. There was maybe that one touchdown pass. That might have been the only effective pass I saw all night long.
I know.
And even they just couldn't break any runs. Like, there was nothing happening.
I know, but you love to say that teams get a lead and sit on the lead. I mean, the defense for Notre Dame was so good last night that they didn't need a lot from the offense.
Then how did Georgia have that? It explains. How did Georgia have that drive at the beginning of the third quarter where everything was clicking? Then to Notre Dame's credit, they played keep away, but it was crazy. I'm like, why didn't Georgia make the whole plane out of that offense? And then they got the ball back at the 50. I'm like, okay, Notre Dame's getting a lot of penalties. They look a little nervous. They're getting tight. And Georgia just could not get it going. I think probably backup quarterback is a big deal. I'm very curious about this Penn State game. I really want to see how Notre Dame runs its offense. Are they just going to try the same thing, just run, or do you need more? Do you need more against probably a healthier team, probably a better? I mean, we don't know about Abdul Carter.
Yeah.
But I just think that Notre Dame can't just do what they did last night and beat Penn State, who knows what's coming, right? They have to mix it up a little bit. It's going to test Marcus Freeman. Marcus Freeman versus James Franklin, that is a fun matchup. I mean, I think we all give an edge to Freeman in this game.
No doubt. I mean, especially after the performance he put on last night, but in a historic matchup, too. I saw this yesterday, EJ, and I think you even retweeted or tweeted it that whoever, obviously, there's a winner of this game is going to be the first ever black head coach coaching for the national championship.
That's correct.
How is that possible in 2025?
Well, there hasn't been the same amount of advancement when it comes to racial diversity in college football compared to the NFL. And the same thing in college basketball and the NBA. The pro leagues have been much faster than the colleges. So it's crazy because we've seen several black coaches coaching in Super Bowls now. So it's crazy. But yeah, this is, we're guaranteed to have either Franklin or Freeman, first black head coach, coaching in national championship game.
Amazing. 855-212-4227. Okay, lots more to do, including we got the number one seed for the NFC is on the line Sunday night, Minnesota and Detroit in the Motor City. But that's not the only game that is going to decide playoff seeding. We've got all the scenarios for you. We've got everything to get you set for this weekend, Saturday and Sunday in the NFL. Don't move.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff. Andrew Bogus is sitting here, and I just said something in the break that I was laughing to myself about. I watched Michael Penix and Atlanta lose to Washington in the game of While We Were Gone, an amazing primetime game. The fact that the New York Giants did take that game makes him take that quarterback an utter laughingstock. That is one of the worst picks in 20 years to take Malik Nabers over Michael Penix. And I'm sorry I'm going to say that to you, Bogus. And I think the Giants are going to screw it up again in this draft, and I just can't wait. I just love dunking on you for that.
Yeah, team. No, first of all, Happy New Year to you as well. The Giants have already messed this up. They won a game while we were gone.
I know.
The last time we were together, I said they're not going to win another game, and then they won the next game that they played, and now they no longer control their destiny. I hate them.
Yes, that was so funny. I mean, we live in New York, and just to watch the Giants fans mourn a victory, and they looked awesome in that win.
Malik Nabers took the game over.
Yeah, he was crazy good.
He does. There's never been a moment like Malik Nabers spinning free on that last touchdown and the entire stadium realizing he was going to score and basically ice the game. You could just hear everyone go, ugh. And then there were boos when he was celebrating the touchdown.
It should have been cake and ice cream for everyone for just showing up to that game. I mean, they're lucky fans showed up.
Yeah, but also shame on the Colts. I mean, let's not lose the is no way that you can let that team look that good. A completely shameless effort by Indianapolis.
Oh, and there's a big expose now in The Athletic about how dysfunctional things are with the Colts. Turns out Anthony Richardson has a terrible back issue, not something you want to hear about your fourth overall pick.
Yeah.
He's like, I could barely move. Everyone questioning his effort, his buy-in. I mean, it's a disaster over there.
Bogus, if I tell you Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward, the Miami quarterback, are not going to work out with the Giants, would you be surprised? I mean, they're
yes,
not.
Yes, I'd be surprised.
Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward goes there, they're winning four games next year. This is
Do you promise?
I just don't think, like, this is not the right team for a quarterback. They should have taken Penix, McCarthy, or Nix.
Well, the crazy thing about Penix, though, is that nobody could have known about him. It's not like he wasn't playing in the national championship or anything. How did he sneak up on everybody? Yeah. He only beat Oregon twice and played for the title.
We didn't his facial structure either. So
you guys gave the Jets a hard time because Woody Johnson's teenage sons were making calls. Meanwhile, we saw in Hard Knocks that Joe Shane, the GM's son, said draft Jaden Daniels. That kid knew what was up. he's like take a quarterback, and his dad ignored him and took a wide receiver. And here we are with the Giants and
he couldn't take Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, but I think
his kid didn't say, how about Bo Nix?
His kid was adamant about quarterback, and he was smart, and he should be running that team. We all know teenagers in our life. They know way more sports. There's a 10-year-old kid my daughter knows who knows the lineup of every baseball team in the league.
Yeah, it's nice when you have real things in your mind.
Yeah, yeah.
I can do that, too.
You have so much space for all that stuff. Yeah, you have so much space for, like, batting averages.
Yeah,
now we got
family,
a lot going on.
Work.
Eight million
girls
passwords.
Haven't even started yet. What'd you say?
8 million passwords.
Password epidemic is just what's going to sink this country. Wow. Why aren't we talking more about the password epidemic and also cybersecurity at the same time? Bogish has headlines.
And these ones are sponsored by GoodRx. For simple, smart savings on your prescriptions, go to GoodRx.com or download the free GoodRx app. If offense is your thing, the Sugar Bowl is not for you. Neither Notre Dame nor Georgia broke 300 yards. They combined for 33 points, 17 of which came from the Irish over a 54-second span bridging halftime. Notre Dame QB Riley Leonard only threw for 90 yards, but he ran for 80, helping drag the Irish to a 23-10 victory. Obviously, we all wish nothing happened in New Orleans, and this game was played as scheduled Wednesday night, but delaying it overnight gave Leonard more time to get ready for the Bulldogs.
Our preparation and the character in our locker room, those are two intangible things that we have that we utilize. So to have an extra day, after we got done praying for all the families, I hit up my quarterback coach and said, all right, can we watch some film tonight?
Leonard's lone touchdown pass came when ND was scoring those 17 points across halftime. They went field goal, strip sack, touchdown pass, intermission, 97-yard kick return touchdown. The defense held Georgia 2 for 13 on third down, 0 for 2 on fourth. So their search for their first national title since 88 continues against Penn State in Miami Thursday night. The other CFP semifinal, Texas-Ohio State, is next Friday in Dallas. The Jets are expected to interview Mike Vrabel for their head coaching job today. They spent yesterday with Ron Rivera, as well as interviewing ESPN's Lewis Riddick for their GM vacancy. The Lakers won last night, 114-106, with LeBron scoring 38, but his podcast co-host, J.J. Redick, took an L courtesy of Charles Barkley. The Laker coach recently took a veiled shot at the Inside the NBA crew, saying their negativity about the NBA doesn't help the NBA. Barkley's response came last night.
J.J., you come for the king, you better not miss. Because I can get you, brother, because I got your Lakers games. You can't hide them flaws they got. You're just a dead man walking. They got rid of Frank Vogel, who did a good job. They got rid of Darvin Ham, who did a good job. But you came out there thinking you were going to change things with that same ugly girl you went on the date with.
64-51 was your halftime score. Lakers, as we get back to the highlights, Rudy Gobert.
He came in there thinking, I can make this thing work. Yeah, you can.
77-71.
Put the makeup on that pig.
Man,
the
Lakers are
pig. The Lakers stink, man.
Oh, man, okay.
Come on, man.
Tatum, by the way, has 33 with some makeup.
Oh, poor Ernie. The Celtics beat the Timberwolves.
That's
he was trying to tell you.
Rudy Gobert's worked in a long time. That interjection was lifting a lot.
I promise you, Rudy Gobert. What a rebound.
Back to the highlights. Rudy Gobert. No, that's amazing.
Rudy Gobert scored 50 points in that highlight.
I mean, let's all come clean. Do you guys think inside the NBA hurts the league?
A little bit.
By being so negative?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I think the exact opposite. The inside the NBA is the only thing I care about.
But they do have some big old women.
Because ESPN is cheerleading, and that does nothing for the product. I think ESPN kills the product. Like, their studio shows, and it's not the host fault, are so bad that, like, it makes the whole product hard to watch for me. I love when games are on TNT. They feel much better. Chuck.
So TNT, just a little pull behind the curtain, they're dealing in a different type of thing. Like, the guys on Inside the NBA have all the time in the world to really expound on things, joke around. They just have the benefit of time post-game, whereas ESPN is quick, fast, get to SportsCenter. Yeah. They are just dealing, it's a different master that they're facing.
Also, too, just like
1-2-3, not 1-2, back to 1.
People respond authentic and honest. People do not respond to ESPN anymore. Like, that's, I mean, like, I think, I don't think it hurts the league. I think it's entertaining. You know, people want entertainment.
To be fair, though, there's times when ESPN can get critical. I see Kendrick Perkins getting critical about guys. Richard Jefferson will get critical on guys. It's not about that. I think inside the NBA just has such the gravitas. To me, is it more that I just don't understand. Here's what I think needs to change. The guys are joking around at their expense. The Shaqt and a Fool and all that stuff. They used to go after JaVale McGee, and he would be so sensitive about it. And I get it. And he would hate it.
I'm going to knock your ass out.
The problem is the current players aren't in on the joke, right? No one's telling them that inside the NBA, in a lot of ways, I think, is a wink and a nod. Like, hey, we're all joking around here, but the players take it seriously and don't have fun back with the Shaq and Kenny and those guys. The players today have the last laugh. They're making way more money than any of these guys ever made. Yet they don't ever, they think it's like a lot more serious, these criticisms, than I think that they are. I think everyone could have a fun time with this if the players would lighten up.
I mean, to some degree, I guess, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't think them saying Kevin Durant's a bus driver was joking. I think that's how they feel. I don't think
But that's years, after years of Durant being sensitive about this. Durant's the most sensitive of anybody.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah, but I'm saying I do think, and some of the shots that Shaq takes at Dwight Howard definitely were not.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that these guys do get personal, to be fair. I feel like, to me, for maybe a person, like, I'm an NBA lifer, right? Yeah. This is what I live and die with. I don't think they add much in terms of learning anything about the game or giving me any insight. Are they entertaining? Sure.
Right.
But do I think, does it get over the top when every time it's like, oh, this game sucks?
Yeah.
Or, oh, they're taking too many threes. Especially when some of the opinions are just, like, silly. Like Shaq saying that he turned off a Wembanyama game because he saw him take a three and not post up. It's just a silly thing to say.
Right. But I ask you this, and that's fair, totally fair criticism, but I ask you, what is the purpose of that show? Is it to educate or is it to entertain?
I don't think it's entertaining to say that Wembanyama, I turned the game off.
Right,
he's the most exciting player in the NBA.
Right, but it is the most entertaining show.
I heard a lot of fans have the same problem with Wemby. It's like, oh, man, he just stands outside. They want to see him, like,
Wembanyama was the best thing that happened on Christmas Day, and there were two NFL games and Beyonce.
Okay? Yeah.
Like, he was the most exciting thing. Like, to see, you have a new face of the league, and you have your guys on your network regularly talking about how he's not playing the right way. There's no way that's helpful.
I think they speak for the fans sometimes, you know, like, I get it. Wemby is not fully realized yet. He's got to win and then he'll become, like, so watchable. But anyway, I don't know. I don't like, so you like ESPN's broadcast?
Absolutely not. They are way worse than Inside the NBA. Let me be very clear.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I'm saying that, do I think that Inside the NBA does not help and that some of their critiques are hurtful? Absolutely. I think JJ Redick is right about that. Do I think they're affecting ratings? I don't know. But we have a ratings drought, and you have the number one show saying these games suck, and everybody, the way they play sucks. There's no way that's helpful. No
way. Victoria, definitely a secret.
The weird thing about the NBA is, yeah, there's a ratings drought, but they just got paid billions and billions of dollars for multiple networks bid to carry their game. So it's definitely still valuable. Anyway, Bogish, back to you.
Other action last night, the Thunder dropped the Clippers 116-98 for a team record 13th straight win, and the Pacers won in Miami 128-115. Tyrese Halliburton, 33 points and 15 assists. A top 25 men's college basketball matchup last night in Eugene. Number 22 Illinois scoring 64 second half points to rout ninth ranked Oregon 109-77. And the Washington Capitals did not win last night, but Alex Ovechkin scored again.
Here is Ovechkin shooting. He scores! It's a power play goal for Alex Ovechkin. His
John Walton on Caps Radio. Minnesota eventually got a 4-3 win after a shootout, but Ovi with his third goal in four games since returning from that broken leg. He's now on 871. As you heard, he needs 24 to break Wayne Gretzky's all-time goals record. Guys, back to you.
Bogish, thank you so much. We've got a lot more to do, including we've got picks to make. We've got more playoff scenarios that we need to set you up with as we head into Week 18, because it's not just the number one overall seed in the NFC that's on the line with Minnesota and Detroit, Perloff. Way more than that. We get it all to you next.
Come on, man.
Welcome back. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff, M&P on the Infinity Sports Network, are also Sirius XM Channel 158. Free Odyssey app. Okay, let's set up to some scenarios. As we mentioned, Perloff, Sunday night, that's the big kahuna. The Detroit Lions hosting the Minnesota Vikings, number one seed in the NFC, is on the line. NFC North, obviously, also on the line. But that's not all. Other things to keep an eye on this Week 18 in terms of playoff scenarios. So, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, if they beat the New Orleans Saints, they win the division. They are in as the four seed. They can also get in with an Atlanta loss or tie against Carolina. Now, Atlanta could win the division if the Bucs lose to New Orleans and they beat Carolina. We have Washington, the Commanders, right now are they are toggling with Green Bay between the sixth seed and the seventh seed. So both teams need to win to get the sixth seed. Whoever loses would get the seven. Green Bay has the tiebreaker there. For both, right? If they both win and both lose, I think I'm right about that.
I thought Washington had the tiebreaker.
Double check me on that one? The AFC North, Ravens need to win or tie against Cleveland. They are a 20-point favorite. Or the Steelers have to lose or tie Cincinnati, and they will win the AFC North. Pittsburgh needs to win, and they need Baltimore to lose to win the AFC North. Now, again, the Ravens are a 20-point favorite in an NFL game. That is just crazy. I don't know if I've ever seen a point spread that high.
Yeah, it's really high, and it's zappy, right, for our Browns.
Is Washington, by the way, has a tiebreaker in the sixth seed for the Green Bay.
Okay, thank you. Sorry about that.
Yep.
So, yeah,
but
I mean,
still a lot to play for Washington and Green Bay.
I think all the critics who say the NFL season is already too long and they want to add more games, like, this week is probably going to play out that way. Let's face it, it really is. It's not a great lineup. Because I don't think, do you expect any of this chaos to happen? Like, what scenario were you looking at? It's like maybe the most realistic.
Okay, I'll tell you, because right now the final wild card spot in the AFC is up for grabs, because the Broncos, if they win, they're in. They have to beat the Chiefs, though, and I know they're home and they're a 10.5-point favorite. It still is Andy Reid and the Chiefs. So,
I know what you mean, and I hope so, but it still feels like a long shot, right?
But so it's the Broncos, it's the Miami Dolphins, and it's the Cincinnati Bengals all vying for that last wild card spot. Again, easiest scenario, Broncos win and they're in. A Denver loss and a Miami win means Miami's in. Cincinnati can only get in if they beat Pittsburgh on Saturday, the Broncos lose, and the Dolphins lose or tie. If Cincinnati, Denver, and Miami all lose, all three lose, Denver gets it. So obviously the Broncos have a couple ways that they can clinch. But the easiest one is just win and get in.
Yeah, it's funny. If they do make it in, it kind of feels like a soft landing in the playoffs for Sean Payton's Broncos. I don't think anybody's afraid of them in the playoffs. It feels like they kind of schedule their way to a winning record. But that being said, like, the future is totally bright with Denver. I love what they're doing. This year, I expect them to win this game, but I don't really expect anything out of them in the playoffs. And I think that's fair to say. I don't even think Denver fans would be mad at me saying that.
This was an unbelievable coaching job by Sean Payton.
Really,
though?
But they beat a bunch of terrible teams, really.
But he had a rookie quarterback all year, and you can say he beat a bunch of terrible teams. He still has to play in the AFC West. He still had to deal with Jim Harbaugh this year. He still has to deal with Andy Reid.
I mean, I guess so, but I just think
they haven't made the playoffs since they won the Super Bowl in 2015. This is a huge deal for Denver if they get in.
Really? They're going to be 10-7, and they'll be massive underdogs in the first game. Is it really a huge deal?
Yes. I think anytime you break a long playoff drought, I think is a huge deal. And how could you not feel really good about the future for Denver when Bo Nix looks like he's the guy? So
let me read their wins. At Tampa Bay in week 3, that was a strange game. Tampa Bay was dealing with some issues. They did kill them. then they beat the Jets, they beat the Raiders, they beat the Saints, they beat the Panthers, they beat the Raiders, the Browns, the Colts. Like, you know, they're not good against good teams.
Yeah, but no one is calling them a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah.
Like, you got to understand, meet them where they are. This is a big deal for a team that was picked to win 4.5 games. The win total was 4.5 or 5?
It doesn't feel like a huge deal to me. Like, I think they're going to lose that first round. And then, like, okay, like, this is whether they make it or not has no bearing on the future of, like, what they're building there. It's something really good. I like what Sean Payton has with Bo Nix. But whether they do a San Diego, you know, this is like the Chargers. They always sneak in at 10-7, Brandon Staley. Didn't really mean much.
They did it once.
Yeah, but whatever. Like, this is like, there's always an AFC West team who's like 9-8 and 10-7. It doesn't blow me away. I've not been wildly impressed by them the second half of the season. They're okay, right? I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I don't know. They come out 10-7. It's like, is anyone picking them to win the AFC West next year? No.
No, but I think you get some playoff experience for Bo Nix in his rookie season. I think that's not nothing.
I think it's close to nothing. It doesn't do anything for me. Again, look at these wins. Like, they just, the schedule just happened to fall right. They're like the Indiana Hoosiers of the NFL.
Okay, so I think I got all the scenarios there, basically.
Carson Wentz playing for a job will be, I think that is the one to watch, right? Like, that's going to be, that's the game of the weekend, not Detroit, Minnesota. Seeing my guy Carson Wentz go up and try, and Zach Ertz killed the Falcons last week. Now it's Carson Wentz, former Eagle, his turn to cause some playoff havoc.
We'll see. 855-212-4227 if you want to weigh in. You got a thought on these games? Let's get to some picks.
Maggie and Perloff's NFL picks.
All right, EJ, what are our records, sir?
Okay, so this is like a little quick 2-week recap. So week 16, Maggie, you went 2-3. Perloff, you went 4-1. Then in week 17, Maggie, you went 3-2. Perloff, you flipped it and went 1-4.
Oof.
So now, Maggie, your overall record is 47-38. Perloff, you're back under 500, 42-43.
Got some work to do. Some bad, bad beats last week. Thank you, Syracuse. God.
That's your fault.
I mean, they had that game. Oh, my. They was basically like, all right, well, it's a backup quarterback. My whole backup defense scored with 6 seconds left to win by 17 points instead of 17.5. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm not going to do any college this week. We'll hit the college games next week. So let's go to some NFL. For me, I've got two games against the spread that I'd like to get to. Number one is Green Bay. I'm going to lay the 10 points at home against the Bears. Obviously, that's a huge number against a division rival. But in Lambeau, I think the Bears, I mean, just end the season. They need a new head coach. I think it's been a long year. I don't think they want any part of this. And meanwhile, Green Bay, they are playing the starters. They do feel like they have a lot to play for. And I think that Green Bay would very much want to avoid having to play Perloff's Eagles in the first round as opposed to maybe going to L.A. to play the Rams. I think they're going to play hard. Green Bay, I'll lay the 10. My other against the spread, tip of the cap to Nick Costos, who also had this. San Francisco plus the... actually, you know what? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do Tampa Bay, and I'm going to lay the 14. Tampa Bay is on the road. They're playing New Orleans. Tampa Bay has everything to play for. They need this win to win the division. Atlanta also has an outside shot of winning the division. So Tampa's got to go full throttle here. I think the Saints, listen, they need a huge overhaul, maybe even GM and coach. So two big spreads, but I feel comfortable with Green Bay laying 10 and Tampa Bay laying 14.
Okay, yeah, that Green Bay one, I love that pick because if... The Bears coaching staff in that last game against Seattle. Like, you don't recover from that.
Oh, they're so bad.
You don't recover from that. Okay.
they lost 6-3.
I kind of like the having games with meaning seems like your trend here. I like the Bengals are still playing for something on the road at Pittsburgh. And Bengals have been really good covering the spread on the road. They're laying 2 points. I'm going to take Cincinnati. I'm making the classic mistake. The Cowboys burned me last week, so I'm betting against them this week. Give me the Commanders. Let's see. I think it's 6. Yes. Washington -6. I'm going to take that Browns-Ravens game over 41. If it's a 20-point spread, I just need something from Zappy. I need just a little something from my guy, Zappy. And then, so I, how are the rules? I guess I have to do two totals here.
Yep.
Okay. It's just because it's so darn low. Let's bet on those Tennessee Titans over 37. Titans, Texans. Texans have not really scored any points in recent weeks. No offensive points. Anyway, so I'm going to go over 37, Texas Titans. My prop I will do. The only guy that's been working for me on props, JSN, step on up. So I have a choice. I can either go 5.5 receptions or 65.5 yards. He needs 5 receptions to break some record for Seattle receivers, 101 catches. That's why I'm going for receiving yards, because they pull him after that catch. 66.5 receiving yards over for Jaxon Smith-Njigba.
Okay. I like it.
And also, Geno has all these incentives, too. I'm going Smith, to that Geno Smith incentive.
Yeah, Geno Smith has $6 million worth of incentives on the line in this game. He gets $2 million if they get to 10 wins. He gets $2 million if he hits a certain percentage, a passing percentage for the season. And he gets $2 million if he hits 185 passing yards for his total passing yards for the season. So,
wow!
Lots to play for. Thank you, Zach. For my over-unders, give me the Chiefs and the Broncos. I'm going to go over 40 in this game. Broncos need this game to get into the playoffs. Carson Wentz is starting for the Chiefs. It's still Andy Reid. I mean, I don't think that they're going to score no points in this game. So over 40, I will take that. Also in this game, I know they're begging you to do it, and I'm going to take the cheese, and I feel like it's a trap, but I'm walking into the trap of taking the Vikings and the Lions over 55.5. I get that it's a big number, but the Lions have to score on every possession. They know this. They're more likely to score 50 points in a game than they are 20 points in a game, in my opinion. 55.5, I'll take the over. And as for my player prop, TJ Hockenson over 4.5 receptions. Also in that game, listen, try as you might, Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison are just going to get so much attention. I think Hockenson will be available over the middle.
Oh, yeah. There's going to be so much passing in that game. It's going to be so much fun. Hockenson's awesome. I was looking. I kind of like Detroit to cover in that game. It's 2.5.
Playing the 2.5?
Yeah.
You didn't pick it.
I know. I was actually leaning between that and Washington. I just want to sit back as a fan and enjoy Minnesota-Detroit, because this is really 55.5. This is my favorite kind of game. I mean, just a shootout. I think Jahmyr Gibbs might probably still, I know he's on Eagle. He's my favorite player in the NFL. He's just so electric. I've been saying that. I said that last year. He's just so amazing. I hope they don't wear him down in this game too much, because he's got to be on a run for playoffs. This is great. Also, quick question. Do you think this is, in essence, for the Super Bowl, this game? Like, the winner, Detroit, Minnesota, gets a number one seed. They get the bye, and they get home field. Do you think whoever comes out of this is, like, the prohibitive favorite in the NFC? Because they will be home.
Yeah.
And Minnesota is a very, very good team at home.
I guess my question is, do I think that either of these teams could go to Philadelphia and win?
Well, that's the thing. Like, whoever wins is not going to have to go to Philadelphia.
No, I know, but yeah. Whoever loses, do I think
that
they
are they
could,
out? Yeah.
Yeah, like, could they go, could Minnesota, if they lose this game, go to Philadelphia and win? I don't think so.
I think both I think the loser's out, and I think the winner is the favorite.
Can I ask you a question? What's going on with Jalen Hurts?
Yeah, who knows? Concussion's tricky.
But he's coming back, right?
Oh, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. No, no one's, as far as I know, no one's talking like he's not going to be available for the playoffs.
Okay, they're just giving him as much rest as possible. What do you think? Is this for the Super Bowl? Did you say yes?
No, I think, I don't think Minnesota, if they win, they're making the Super Bowl. But I think if Detroit wins, then it's probably, I would put a future bet on them. I think like Detroit will be in a great position if it comes through Detroit, if they're indoors. Yeah, this is going to be a really great game. Yeah, you got a lot of interest in here.
I do. And I do feel like it's a trap taking the 55.5, but I'm doing it. Thank you, DJ Stewart. Thank you to Manny Rodriguez. Thank you to Andrew Bogish and Andrew Kaplan, the Weedos and the Coffee Drinkers, Paul Allen, who joined us, the voice of the Vikings, Nick Costos from You Better You Bet. Have a great weekend, everyone. We're back on Monday.